VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Friends, I hope you'll stay tuned through the hour today. We have got much, much critical information to share with you today. Coming up next week, May 22nd through the 28th, we've got the World Health Organization meeting in Geneva. We have the Biden administration advancing a plan to surrender, yes, to surrender our national sovereignty to the United Nations World Health Organization. It's a plan that would allow the WHO to acquire unprecedented power, enabling them to declare a so-called health emergency in any nation, including our United States of America, and give them control over things like our food supplies, agriculture, aviation, the environment, and so much more. Are you concerned yet? If not, ladies and gentlemen, check your pulse. If you are concerned, stay tuned, because we've got some critical information we need to share with you on the program today. Welcoming back to our program, Alex Newman, an award-winning international freelance journalist. He's an author, a researcher, an educator, a consultant, editor of The New American, and contributes to other publications. He's author of Crimes of the Educators and Deep State, The Invisible Government Behind the Scenes, founder of Liberty Sentinel as well. Alex, welcome back here to Crosstalk.
Thank you so much for having me, Jim. It's great to be with you.
We've got a lot to unpack today, and I'd like to begin with some basics. We're going to be talking about the World Health Organization, or the WHO. Who or what is this organization, and who runs it?
Well, thank you, Jim. And so the World Health Organization was one of those multilateral institutions born in the aftermath of World War II. It was always intended to gradually accumulate more and more power, just like the United Nations. It is a UN organization, and it's got almost universal membership. Basically, every nation state, every national government in the world is a member, and it operates very much like the other UN agencies. It has its own constitution that purports to delegate enormous powers to it. Typically, these powers haven't been exercised in a very blatant way, especially not against the United States or Western countries. But the objective to further empower this institution has been there from the very beginning. It's incredibly influential. And when people think of the worst excesses of the last 2 years and how globally coordinated totalitarian policies, unprecedented in human history, came down in virtually every nation at virtually the same time in response to what now should be obvious to everyone was not the enormous threat that it was made out to be. That's not to say that there was no threat, but it certainly was not this catastrophic world-ending plague like it was presented to be. And people wonder, how did that happen? How did almost every nation in the world implement the exact same policies at the exact same time in response to a threat that, at least superficially, people didn't even understand? And the answer is that was all coordinated through the World Health Organization. Now, on paper, the World Health Organization is run by its members. Again, its member states are national governments. That includes everything from, you know, the U.S. government and Western European allies of the U.S. government to mass murdering dictatorships and kleptocracies. The regime in Beijing, the Communist Party of China, is probably its most influential member state at this point. But it's one among many. Of course, North Korea gets a vote there. All the dictatorships get a vote there. And at the very head of this organization is a man I would really characterize as a puppet of the regime in Beijing, the most murderous dictatorship in human history. His name is Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus, and I've been exposing him for years. He's got a long and very sordid history. In fact, prior to his entrance into government in Ethiopia as the right-hand man of a mass-murdering communist dictator, he was actually on the Politburo, the decision-making central committee of an ethno-Marxist communist terrorist group known as the Tigray People's Liberation Front. Now, this was a Marxist terror group. It did use terrorism as a tactic to advance its objectives, but what kind of distinguished it from other Marxist and communist groups was the ethnic component. It was specifically for the Tigray people who had been having a long-running feud with the Amhara people in Ethiopia and others. And so when I say that the WHO is literally run by a former communist terrorist, that's no exaggeration at all. He's actually not even a medical doctor. He's got a PhD. But I think that gives you a, kind of the basics, an overview of what this is, where it came from, and what it's doing to.
Well, we know that former President Trump, I mean, he pulled money from the World Health Organization, and Joe Biden very quickly put that money back in. You have recently authored an article, Alex, in which you wrote that the Biden administration is plotting, yes, plotting with the United World Health Organization in a unprecedented power grab to build a planetary biomedical police state. Alex, unfold this for us. Tell us what's happening.
Well, thank you, Jim. And I apologize in advance for the complex terminology. I think that the people who do their marketing figure that this is a good way to confuse people and make their eyes kind of glaze over when you try to tell them about it. But I'll try to break it down as simply as possible. So under the treaty that created the World Health Organization, which was ratified in 1948, there have been a number of subsequent changes to that that have just been piled on over the years without any re-ratification by the U.S. Senate. Now, in 2005, the World Health Organization came up with what's known as the International Health Regulations. It's a very, very significant document, and it's supposed to govern, among other things, the WHO and national government's response to health threats, including pandemics. And so you have a number of powers and purported powers and authorities in there, including many of the tools that were used during the COVID pandemic to lock down societies and things like this. Well, the Biden administration, in particular, the Department of Health and Human Services, which is, of course, where Rachel Levine, the transgender assistant secretary of health, served in a top position. They have proposed to the WHO and to the director general, this Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus that I mentioned earlier, a series of amendments, 13 amendments. And there are a number of different amendments, some less significant than others. But I think the most significant change that would come through these amendments is striking of language in the international health regulations requiring the consent of the country being targeted, or in this case, the government being targeted. So, when the Ivory Coast had an outbreak of Ebola, under the leadership of the previous head of the WHO, another communist Chinese agent named Margaret Chan, the WHO declared a disaster and they ordered, whole villages quarantined. In fact, the whole country basically was put on under medical martial law. And the Obama administration sent troops over there to help support this totalitarian exercise in government power. And in that case, the government of the Ivory Coast was required to consent to this, right? And that has been true all along. If the WHO wanted to undertake some measure or make some declaration about what was going on in a country, that country's government needed to consent to what the WHO was doing. Under these amendments to the regulations proposed by the Biden administration, that consent by the target government would no longer be required. That is, I think the most significant of the power grabs. Yeah. There are several others that really expand the authority of the WHO. And really, this is a two-punch operation.
And so Alex, I'm going to have you get to that two-punch in just a moment, but I want people to understand the gravity of this. I mean, a nation has to consent, and this is going to remove that consent of a nation to the World Health Organization. Did I hear you correctly with that?
That's exactly right. And so, hypothetically, and just to be clear, Jim, we're not talking just about pandemics, right? It would be bad enough if it was just about pandemics, and we saw how they lied about pandemics over the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But you now have, at the highest levels of power, in the WHO, in the U.S. government, in our state government, you have people, very seriously, you have policies on the books that argue that climate change is a public health crisis,
right,
that argue that racism is a public health crisis. And, of course, now under the new definition of racism, literally everything could be construed as racism. They say gun violence is a public health crisis. So under these new authorities being accumulated by the WHO, they would have basically the power to do anything they want without the consent of that government. So hypothetically, maybe Donald Trump gets reelected in 2024. The WHO comes up and says, well, hey, there's a racism epidemic and it's a public health crisis in America, and we need to intervene there in some way. And that's where the second punch comes in that I'll mention in a moment. So under the existing regulations, they would have to go and obtain the consent of the U.S. government to have some sort of intervention or make some sort of declaration about what's happening in the United States. Under the proposed amendments that the Biden administration has proposed, and already 50 governments at least have already publicly announced that they support these. They'll be voted on next week in Geneva. They would no longer have to get that approval or consent. They could just go ahead and do it.
This is outrageous. I mean, this in essence puts them in the position of being a global health dictator.
That's right. I think that's a perfect way to characterize it. And the second facet of this, that's just what's happening now. And again, this is happening almost completely in the shadows. Your average American, your average Frenchman, your average German, your average Indonesian has no idea what is being contemplated right this moment in Geneva. But the second part, right after this, in June, the World Health Organization is coming together again, and they're going to be considering what they refer to as an international pandemic treaty. So first, with the amendments to the regulations, they're going to remove the requirement of consent by a government. Then phase two comes in, where they're going to hand vast new powers to the WHO through this international pandemic treaty. And some of the topics that have been proposed already would include financial sanctions on governments that don't cooperate or nations that don't cooperate, punitive measures, also rewards for governments that do cooperate. So what's happening here? We need to be very clear, Jim. What's happening here is the World Health Organization is being empowered to behave as not just a government, but really a dictatorship with yes. no semblance of public accountability at all. What if we don't like Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus? We can't vote him out of office. We can't express our opinion in congressional elections. There's no court that's going to be able to hold him accountable. So these people think they are going to become basically the rulers of the planet under the guise of keeping us healthy.
Friends, keep in mind what and understand what Alex is saying, because you can see this lust for power is great. I mean, the lust is for power is wanting even more. And so not only do we have the, you know, these regulations that come about, but also propelling us toward this international pandemic treaty that is supposed to come about the following month or the month of June. Alex, and you mentioned this, and I think it's important for us to understand whatever they deem as being a global health emergency. Now, look at the mantra we're hearing right now on the abortion issue. If indeed the Supreme Court upholds this leaked document here, we hear over and over abortion is health care. And if all of a sudden we have a Supreme Court that says, wait a second, we're turning this back to the states, we don't have the power to issue rulings on this, it goes back to the states. We could have this organization say, wait a second, abortion is health care. This is a health emergency. We must intervene.
Oh, and I can almost guarantee you that that's what would happen, Jim. The UN has been claiming that the murder of unborn babies is a human right for decades. They've enshrined this in numerous international agreements, oftentimes with the full consent of whatever U.S. administration happened to be in power. So they have established this very clearly. They've got what they call UN special rapporteurs that run around the world identifying alleged human rights violations. And what you find is the alleged human rights violations they identify have nothing in common with the God-given rights that our founding fathers enshrined in our founding documents, the right to life, the right to liberty, the right to property, the right to pursue happiness. Instead, they identify a right to the highest possible standard of health, or the right to a good education, which means an education that the UN approves of, the right to sexual and reproductive health care, which means the right to kill your babies, the right to take all kinds of contraception and force that on the population. So this is very clearly the agenda of the United Nations, and I can guarantee you that if this is not derailed, there will come some point in the future. It may not be tomorrow, it may not be next year, but some point in the future where the WHO and the United Nations will come in and actually take hostile action against a nation for refusing to tolerate the murder of its unborn citizens.
Alex Newman with us here today on Crosstalk, folks. Our program coming as a warning today as this WHO pandemic treaty is placing our sovereignty as a nation at risk. We're going to delve further into this and also let you know how you can get engaged with this matter as well. But, folks, they're meeting next week, May 22nd through the 28th. We'll be back in just 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, creation author with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, was Genesis written as poetry?
No, it wasn't, Chris, but this has been a favorite claim of liberals, subtly indicating that Genesis was a work of art and not meant to be taken as literal history. But this has been shown to be false. At the Institute for Creation Research, we've investigated this claim. It was found by statistical analysis of the verb tenses used in the Genesis account of creation that it's about the least poetic passage in all the Old Testament. It was written as sober narrative history and was meant to be understood by its readers as history. Of course, even if it were poetry, it doesn't mean it's not to be believed. Who says God can't write with flair? But he wrote Genesis as a sober historical account, and we need to believe it as such. Let's go back to Genesis and get it right.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
Ladies and gentlemen, evil is afoot, and this program today, as I said, it's a warning, as this WHO pandemic treaty really places our sovereignty at risk, as it does every nation across this globe. Alex Newman is our guest here today. He's an award-winning international freelance journalist. You can read so many of his columns at thenewamerican.com, thenewamerican.com. He's also founder of Liberty Sentinel, libertysentinel.org. Alex, as we're talking about this, I read an article just recently about, you know, these projection models. We have them, you know, wrongly project man-made global climate change and all things, these things. But there's also one of these projection models that indicates that there are going to be 100 million Americans that are going to come down with COVID this fall. And I thought, how convenient, just in time for the elections. And now, okay, we need to have all of these new election rules. I mean, things like this could be determined by the World Health Organization.
Yeah, and that's exactly right, Jim. And we saw during COVID, they almost could not have done it any worse. I mean, early on when COVID was first identified and we knew it was in Wuhan, we knew it was spreading in China, Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus, of course, under the control of the CCP, said, oh, there's nothing to worry about. Oh, Trump is a racist for trying to stop travel from China to the United States. Oh, it's so terrible. How dare he? And then a few months later, after COVID had been spread to every corner of the globe, thanks to the WHO's intervention, then suddenly it was, oh, my goodness, this is so horrible. This is so scary. You all have to give up all your freedoms. You can't go to church anymore. You can't go to your small business anymore. You can't go to work anymore. You can't meet your friends or your neighbors. You can't go to funerals. Can't go to hospitals to visit your relatives. You can go get abortions. You can go to liquor shops and pot shops. And you can certainly go burn down your cities if it's in the interest of racial justice. I mean, this all came out of the World Health Organization with its allies in the United States, like Dr. Anthony Fauci and Democrats in Congress. So if you thought that was bad, that was under the existing authorities that the WHO already has. And that was in a system where nations and governments had to offer their consent for these sorts of policies to be put into place. If these people get their way, it will become intensely more totalitarian and more draconian, and you can expect to see what we saw with COVID only worse. And I tell people, look at what's happening in Shanghai right now.
Yes.
Imagine that on a planetary scale, and you get some sense of what these totalitarians are hoping to accomplish.
Well, Alex, wouldn't the United States really be a primary target with this? I mean, if they can put the U.S. under control and seize control of the U.S. and our infrastructure, whatever it may be, that all other nations are just going to fall into place?
There's no question about it. The United States has always been the primary target of those seeking to bring the world under this one world system. Now, on the one hand, we've had plenty of collaborators within our own government who have been primary drivers of this. And, you know, we've talked about some of them on this show before. The Council on Foreign Relations is an organization whose members just keep popping up over and over and over again in this effort. But on the other hand, the United States also represents simultaneously the greatest roadblock to this, because here's a country, the most powerful in the world, economically, militarily, culturally, and in every sense, that is founded based on these principles that, of course, were extracted from the Bible, the idea that God gave each individual certain inalienable rights, the idea that God created each individual equally, and the idea that God established governments to protect individuals and their rights. This came straight from the Bible, as many of the founding fathers like Sam Adams explained in 1772 when he articulated those very same words and said that these principles come straight out of the New Testament from the head of the Christian church, that, of course, being Jesus Christ. So you have this monster roadblock right in the path of these totalitarians. And as Rich Higgins, Donald Trump, the National Security Council's director of policy and planning under the Trump administration, explained, you now have this convergence of these different groups around the world that are working together, the Islamists, the socialists, the globalists, the deep state, as they were identified in the memo and as Donald Trump called them, all working together. Rich Higgins said in this memo to the president, not just to destroy the United States as a nation, that would be one objective and it would be bad enough, but even to destroy the ideal upon which the United States is founded. And so I think the American people need to understand you are the primary target of these machinations.
And okay, so we're the primary target, but who's targeting us? It is the Biden administration, Alex. They're the ones who are writing these amendments to be passed by who? That's going to be foisted upon us.
That's exactly right. The Biden administration, and I would say really the handlers behind Joe Biden. I mean, at this point, you know, with all due respect to the president, he really doesn't seem to have a solid understanding of what he's doing, where he's standing, what job he holds. You know, he's kind of reading from teleprompters very sloppily. But the people behind him, very much the same people behind Barack Obama some years ago, they fully understand what they're doing. In my opinion, they are deliberately waging war on their own country. And I don't know how else you can explain this. I mean, you see this surface in the deliberate aiding and abetting of the rise of one of the most murderous dictatorships to have ever existed. I refer to communist China. You see this in the constant efforts to surrender our sovereignty. You see this in the efforts to destroy our energy infrastructure. You see this in the efforts to destroy our currency and its purchasing power. You know, at some point, you have to look at all this together and say there's no other explanation that makes sense other than that this is a deliberate effort to take down our country and, of course, our Constitution.
Dr. Robert Malone calls this an impeachable offense. Do you agree, Alex?
I agree 100%. I would say it's one of many impeachable offenses that Biden and his associates have perfeated against this country. Actually, I'll be interviewing Dr. Robert Malone tomorrow for The New American on exactly this subject. So people will be able to find that at thenewamerican.com. But he's absolutely correct. I mean, this is almost a declaration of war against our country. This is an effort to overthrow the document that he swore an oath to defend and uphold, the U.S. Constitution.
Does our government, our federal government, do they even possess powers to turn the health of our nation over to another entity?
They do not, and I think that's very clear. I always encourage people to read the Constitution. Don't take my word for any of this. Just go read the Constitution. It's fairly short. It's fairly simple. You can sit down and, you know, you'll read it in maximum a few hours if you're a slow reader. And, you know, don't take my word for it. Go to Article 1, Section 8. That lists all the powers that are granted to Congress, all the areas in which it can legislate. Of course, the Constitution also reserves all legislative powers to the Congress. That means there's none for the president. That means there's none for the court. So all legislative powers at the federal level are in the Congress, and the powers of Congress are listed in Article 1, Section 8. You can read that any which way you want, even with a very expansive interpretation of the words, and you will not find any reference to health care. You will not find any reference to locking us down, shutting down our businesses, forcing us to wear masks on airplanes, or anything of the sort. And so what's happening here is the U.S. government has usurped a power that does not belong to it, and that's, by the way, explicitly stated. If you go to the 10th Amendment of the Constitution, it says any powers not specifically delegated to the United States, in other words, powers that the states clearly gave to the federal government, those powers are reserved to the states or to the people. In other words, if it's not specifically listed as a power of the federal government in the U.S. Constitution, that is a power that the states or the people have reserved to themselves, and that means the federal government may not act in that area. So what the federal government has done here is it has usurped a power that doesn't belong to it, and now it's trying to give that power that it usurped away to an even more unaccountable entity, in this case the World Health Organization, without even following basic constitutional procedures like Senate ratification. So in my opinion, Jim, and in the opinion of many legal scholars, this is null and void on its face. But that doesn't mean they won't try it, and that doesn't mean that they won't actually do it.
Folks, as Alex said, read the Constitution. If you don't have a copy, I'll just mention, we keep these on hand here at Crosstalk. Documents of Freedom, it's a pocket-size booklet. It's got inside it the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution of the United States, you've got the Bill of Rights in here, and you've got George Washington's farewell address, all in a handy little booklet. But we have people get multiple copies of these. We make them available for just a donation of $5. Those documents, well, that includes the shipping to you. All you need to do is call our switchboard here at 800-729-9829 and ask for Documents of Freedom. That's 800-729-9829. Alex, tell us about Dr. Stueckelberger and the warning this doctor provides.
Well, thank you. So Dr. Stueckelberger was a leader within the WHO. In fact, she ran a WHO agency in Geneva. She still lives there. She has a PhD in population health and epidemiology. And so this is what she's been doing throughout her life. In fact, for decades, she has either worked with the WHO, in the WHO, or for organizations that are working with the WHO. And she actually taught the international health regulations at a graduate level in universities around the world. So there are very few people on the planet more qualified to speak on this than she is. And I encourage people to go watch the interview that we did with her. We spoke with her for about 35 or 40 minutes, and she broke down all of what's going on, and she explained very clearly in no uncertain terms that what they're trying to do here is create a one-world health dictatorship run by the WHO, which, of course, is under the control of Communist China and its agents. So, you know, she lays it out very clearly, no beating around the bush, and she explains that the WHO was really the coordinating mechanism for the totalitarian policies that we saw imposed on the planet over the last 2 years. And, again, this is what they want to do on a permanent basis, on a legal basis, for the indefinite future going forward. And if people don't actually put a stop to it, there's a very real prospect that they will succeed.
And that's what I'd like to get to next, because we see this, the danger that is lurking here. And I understand that they're set to approve these regulations by the end of May, by May 28th. So the question is, what can our listeners do, Alex? I mean, are not treaties supposed to be ratified by the U.S. Senate? I don't see any mentions of any of this, that this will go to the U.S. Senate and they'll debate this and talk about it. What can our listeners do, and where does the Senate come into play?
Yeah, they are not planning on consulting the Senate. They're taking a playbook from the Obama administration. In fact, I watched all of this happen. I had a front row seat when this happened in Paris. They came up with the Paris Agreement. Now, they knew there was no chance they were going to be able to get that ratified by the U.S. Senate, and they know there's no chance they'll be able to get this ratified by the U.S. Senate. And so what they are doing is they're saying this is really just an extension of the authorities granted to the WHO under the 1948 treaty that created the WHO. It's really not a big deal. We don't need to actually go back to the U.S. Senate and ask about it. It's just an extension of what was already done. So that is their thinking. But again, I want to go back to the Constitution here. First of all, you cannot enter into international agreements without the advice and consent of the Senate. They need two-thirds of the senators to be able to approve something like this. Second of all, as we discussed just a moment ago, Jim, this is not constitutional, and therefore they can't do it even if they could get Senate ratification. Okay, and this has been clear from the very beginning. Thomas Jefferson actually pointed out this obvious fact in 1803. He said that, you know, if the treaty-making power is boundless, then we have no constitution. In other words, if the U.S. government can just grant new powers to itself just by signing a treaty with some other government or some international organization, what's the point of having a constitution? Yeah. There are no limits then to the power of the federal government, and that is preposterous on its face. The Supreme Court of the United States upheld that view in most recently in Reed versus Covert in 1957, where a case came to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court pointed out quite obviously that, no, the U.S. government cannot delegate new powers to itself just by signing international agreements, whether they're properly ratified or not. So what's happening here is a scam. It's a legal fraud on many levels. But, you know, they did it with the Paris Agreement, right? The Obama administration went over there and signed that. They called it an executive agreement. And then Obama got home and he started ordering all the federal agencies using edicts and presidential memorandums and executive orders and this, that, and the other. Started ordering all the agencies to implement this. And we see that continuation with Joe Biden. Under the guise of enforcing the Paris Agreement, he has shut down huge amounts of oil production. He has sabotaged our energy infrastructure. So legally, this is outrageous. It's laughable. Any serious legal scholar who has even read the Constitution would recognize this as a fraud. But again, that doesn't mean that they won't do it and maybe even get away with it if Americans don't do something.
Okay, so we're going to pick up with this thought here after the break, folks. What can individuals do? Where can you let your voice be heard on this? And folks, yeah, they've done it with this Paris deal. They've done it with the Iran deal as well, folks. Don't you remember what Barack Obama did there? Well, we've got more to discuss here after the break. Stay with us. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Babylon is mentioned nearly 300 times in Scripture, from Genesis to Revelation. God's end-time program for Babylon has its roots in the historical account of the Tower of Babel. Their leader Nimrod, whose name means rebellion or revolt, led the people in defiance against God, pursuing what he saw as a new world order. In the book, Babylon, the bookends of prophetic history, author Dr. Andy Woods reveals it's not only the old Babylon that pursued such a path, but believes the scriptural evidence points to the new Babylon that will be rebuilt as the headquarters of the Antichrist will serve as a political authority over the earth and the future seat of global religious authority. He examines the scriptures that call for a futuristic, literal Babylon in God's End Times program. Copies of Babylon are available for a donation of $16 when you call 1-800-729-9829.
Friends, please do not turn deaf ears to the matters that are being unfolded today. What you're hearing on Crosstalk today, these are critical issues as it is just coming up days from now in which World Health Organization is going to be meeting and coming about, you know, under the guise of these international health regulations and establishing of these. We have the Biden administration giving all sorts of amendments here in order to really have nations surrender their sovereignty so that this is not going to be at the consent of a nation to you know, abide by these health regulations. No, it's going to be foisted upon them. Our own presidency, administration here, and who's ever behind him, is putting this forth and up for votes that are taking place, regulations that they want to have adopted by May the 28th, coming together here during the month of June as well, and putting these in, you know, this international pandemic treaty. Alex Newman is with us here today, and Alex, I know people want to speak out on this issue, but who do they speak out to?
Well, thank you, Jim. And you know, under normal circumstances, Congress would be the obvious place to go. And as Dr. Robert Malone said, this is an impeachable offense. In my view, in his view, it is almost waging war on your own country. You're talking about handing sovereignty of your own nation over to a group, an organization that is under the control of a hostile foreign government. I mean, that comes perilously close to the T word. So I think obviously you want to contact your member of Congress. You want to contact your two senators and tell them that you find this to be completely unacceptable and repugnant, that you view it as their duty to stand in the way here and do something. Now, the U.S. House of Representatives could very simply put an end to this. All they have to do is in the next budget bill say there will be no money for the World Health Organization. There will be no money for implementing these illegal, unconstitutional, ridiculous, fake agreements. And, in fact, we're going to defund the HHS department that was involved in this. It'll be a very simple thing to do, and we'll see what happens in the midterm. Maybe if the Republicans do well, maybe there'll be enough anger over this issue that something positive can come out of it. In fact, there already is a bill in the Congress to defund the WHO, and I believe it just got 12 new co-sponsors in the last couple days here. Yeah, it's called the No Taxpayer Funding for the World Health Organization Act. It was sponsored by Representative Chick Roy of Texas, and they just got 12 new co-sponsors yesterday, some of the best members of Congress in there, at least from a constitutional and conservative point of view. They're up at 31 total.
Do you have a bill number for that?
That is H.R. 419. So, one thing you can talk to your member of Congress about. Now, of course, Donald Trump did get us out of the WHO, which was, in my opinion, a positively brilliant move. And if he wins again in 2024, maybe that'll be high up on the priority list. But there's something else that people can do right now, Jim, that I think would be even more effective than contacting their member of Congress, even though I think that's a good idea and it should be done.
And let me interrupt just a moment, because before we go to point number two, let me just give you a point of contact, a phone number here to your House and to your Senate. They do need to hear from you, but prong number two is very, very important, so be ready to jot down that information as well. So prong number one is contacting your member of the House of Representatives. Their phone number to the House switchboard is 202-225-3121, 202-225-3121. The phone number, or you can go to house.gov and get their specific number, and you're going to be fastest doing that if you have access online. House.gov, look up the House members, and you can get the exact number going into your congressional office. Then there, the U.S. senators, you have two of them, you can call this number, 202-224-3121. That's the Senate switchboard, 202-224-3121. Or to get the specific number, go to senate.gov. That's prong number one, is contacting your member of the House of Representatives, your two members of the U.S. Senate. But, Alex, you've got another vital point of action that listeners can take.
Yeah, and I would say, Jim, that this is probably even more important than contacting members of Congress. Now, there's no substitute for that. You know, the first point of contact should be the federal representatives and the federal senators, because this is a federal issue. But at the state level, there is a lot that can be done. In fact, if you go back and look at the Federalist Papers, if you go back and look at the Virginia and Kentucky resolutions when Virginia and Kentucky went against the federal government on the Alien and Sedition Act, what the Founding Fathers said was that state nullification, state interposition was, and I'm quoting from James Madison and Thomas Jefferson here, the rightful remedy to federal usurpation. So when the federal government usurps powers that do not belong to it, Thomas Jefferson, the author, primary author of our Declaration of Independence, and James Madison, who's known as the father of our Constitution, both agreed that the correct remedy was for the states to say, okay, you know, you can pass that statute, but it's illegal, it's unconstitutional, and so it's not going to be applying in our state. Even Alexander Hamilton, who was the, of all the founding fathers, he was probably the most enamored with big government and centralized, powerful federal government. Even he said in the Federalist Papers that the correct response would be for states to ignore these usurpations and to work against them. In fact, he even said that they should refuse to cooperate with the officers of the Union, is how he put it in one of the Federalist Papers defending the Constitution. So that's what our Founding Fathers saw as the correct response when the federal government usurps power that doesn't belong to it. And we have the opportunity right now to remind the American people about that. If we could get 15, 20, maybe 30 states to pass laws saying that WHO, those international health regulations and this pandemic treaty that they're working on, those are not going to apply in our state. Any government employee of this state or any subdivision thereof, a county or a city, who is caught participating in any way in the enforcement with any policies originating with the WHO or any of its subsidiaries, will be fired immediately. And if they want to take it a step further, you might even say that there's criminal sanctions for participating in the imposition of this sort of totalitarian, unconstitutional policy on Americans. And this is something that states can do right now. I recognize that a lot of legislatures, their sessions have already ended for the year, and that's unfortunate. But we always have special sessions that can be convened, and 2023 is a new year. Legislatures will be meeting again, and that's a perfect opportunity for states to exercise their authority under our 10th Amendment, under the U.S. Constitution, to resist these usurpations. We have precedent for this. In fact, in Alabama, every member of the legislature, unanimous decision, every Democrat included, voted in favor of a total ban on UN Agenda 21, which is the UN Sustainable Development Program that they came up with in Rio de Janeiro in the early 1990s. I actually went to Rio shortly after that law was passed in Alabama and asked a bunch of these UN people, hey, so what do you think? Alabama banned your little sustainability program. What do you think about that? And, you know, they got real mad, but there's really nothing they can do. What are they going to invade Alabama? What are they going to invade Oklahoma or Florida or South Carolina or Wisconsin? We must do this. We must remind the federal government that we're not just going to roll over to these types of unconstitutional, lawless policies.
And, Alex, at the same time, I think we have to understand the realities of this, because I believe it was under the Obama administration you referred to earlier that the Obama administration sent U.S. troops to help the UN enforce medical martial law in the Ivory Coast.
And that's right.
And so, I mean, we'd have to be very concerned about a Biden administration sending in U.S. troops even against our own people, or somehow allowing UN troops into the U.S. to enforce things like this.
Yeah, and you know, when you hear that, I think a lot of people who haven't followed closely what's going on, when you hear something like that, it just sounds so far-fetched. But unfortunately, we know that the U.S. government and especially the people who are running it at this moment do believe that that is an appropriate exercise of power. Again, the people who are running the Obama administration are almost exactly the same people running the Biden administration. They sent American soldiers to help the U.N. enforce medical martial law in the Ivory Coast. Very little reported on that in the United States. We did an article about it at the New American at the time. But, you know, that those are the facts. And they have been for many, many years trying to figure out, you know, what do we do about all these American troops? Because typically American soldiers are some of our most patriotic people. They love this country. They all take an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution. So what we see is, you know, right now we see these efforts to purge the military of patriotic constitutional conservatives. We see these efforts to impose woke policies on our armed forces. And so people need to recognize that this is a danger. We have a government that is behaving lawlessly, a government where supposedly every one of these officials put their hand on a Bible and took an oath to uphold the Constitution, and yet they are flagrantly, it's not even a debatable question, they are flagrantly violating that oath. And so I think states now need to take the lead in pushing back and making clear that this is unacceptable, it's illegal, and it cannot be tolerated.
Our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. And Alex, we're going to bring another component into this, and that is a matter of prayer. This is really a matter that people need to take before the throne of grace.
Absolutely, Jim. And I would say that really should be step one. And, you know, during the founding era, our founding fathers were outnumbered. They were up against the most powerful military in the world. They begged the king. They begged the parliament. They begged the governors, please stop doing this to us. And they were spurned at every turn. They were spit on. They were laughed at. They were kicked out. And so they actually, and this is what they said, they're going to appeal to a higher court, because there is a higher court than the
yes.
Supreme Court. There is a higher court than the UN court. That is the court of heaven.
Yes.
And we should take a lesson from them. We should appeal to heaven on this issue and so many others and beg for divine intervention here and beg for God's will to be done.
Where is the national media on this? I mean, am I just been away too long? I mean, where is ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, MSNBC, Fox? Are they covering this issue?
Not at all. It's almost like a memo went out and said, hey, you have to ignore one of the most important stories of the year. Do not say a word about it. Don't talk about the WHO. Don't talk about the head of the WHO. Don't talk about what the Biden administration is doing. Very similar to what we saw with the 2000 Mules documentary, right?
Great.
Not a peep about it from Fox or from Newsmax or from CNN. Total silence. And I think whenever you see total silence on an issue this important, you need to realize something very significant is happening, and there's some reason why they don't want you to know.
Folks, you can read about it, though, at thenewamerican.com. As a matter of fact, do a search for Alex's story that he wrote, Resistance Grows to UN, WHO and Biden, Global Health Power Grab. You'll find it at thenewamerican.com. Other stories there as well. Mark in Newark, Ohio, you're on the air.
Yeah, it's kind of scary what I'm hearing. And what you was talking about the UN when they went into Canada and they stopped that truckers union thing, and they weren't even the police department from the area where they were doing it at. So it can happen here. People's going to have to wake up and understand that if you want to keep your nation, you're going to have to fight for it. And I'm not talking about on the streets. I'm talking about calling your Congress and your senator. And let them know how you feel. Don't sit there on your hands and say, oh, they'll do something about it. If you haven't been watching what's been going on the last year and a half, then you must be got a bucket on your head or something. I don't know.
Well, thank you, Mark, for that the call there. Alex is saying, folks, we got to wake up.
Yeah, no question about it. And, you know, I agree with the caller. Thanks for calling in. You know, if we're going to save our country, and that's a big if, first of all, we're going to need to ask for God to be restored to his rightful place in our nation.
Yeah.
Right? Our nation was founded by people who put the Lord first and center in everything. And we've really moved away from that. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're seeing what we're seeing. So we need to go back to that. And we do need to get involved. I mean, we've had decades, generations now where Christians and the church have really shunned politics. And, you know, is Jesus the Lord of everything or is he not? If he's the Lord of everything, he should be the Lord of our politics. He should be the Lord of our marriages and our businesses and our voting and our political systems. And so, you know, if Christians do want to try to save what we have here, that's got to begin with a realization that God needs to be in charge of everything.
Friends, if you recall our recent program with Sam Rohrer from American Pastors Network, just the warning, we as a nation, we have forgotten God. God has given us so many opportunities. We continue to thumb our nose at him and turn our back on him. Is it any wonder we're facing these things? It's time we turn back to him, appeal to the God of this universe. Back in a minute, you're listening to Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Many Americans wonder, how is it that communism has been so successful in America, penetrating so many of our government agencies to the point we refer to them now as the deep state? Reality is that Moscow, in 1960, released a document to their comrades worldwide calling for war on the anti-communist groups. Anti-communist groups like the John Birch Society and anti-communist individuals like Ronald Reagan or John Wayne. These people were particularly targeted because the communists in Moscow knew they were having great influence. Then the FBI had their hands tied after liberal Frank Church, U.S. Senator, held hearings in 1975 on our intelligence agencies. As a result, the Levy guidelines, named after Attorney General for Gerald Ford, were released that tied the hands of the FBI from investigating the communist.
Yes, friends, a warning today here on Crosstalk, and it is, as we said, evil running afoot right now, and it's gone amok as we have the World Health Organization really joining forces with the Biden administration to bring this about. And again, contacting your member of the House, your members of the U.S. Senate, your own state legislative leaders as well. Alex Newman, our guest here today, and incidentally, Alex is going to be speaking at our VCY rally in southeast Wisconsin at the Waukesha Expo, Saturday, September 17th. Mark it on your calendar if you're within driving distance, plan to be at this event. You'll see his column and many others at thenewamerican.com. And we'll go right back to the phone lines. We have Dominique calling from Mequonago, Wisconsin. Dominique, you're on the air.
Hi, Alex. I loved what you said about God being Lord of our politics, too. I also really appreciate your second step of asking states to nullify. I was wondering, can you please clarify the difference between an individual state nullifying against international federal treasonous entanglements against those who call for a convention of states as a solution for every ailment of the federal government, and indeed how incredibly dangerous an Article 5 convention would be to our Constitution that stands between us and the New World Order, the Great Reset?
Well, there's another 2 hours. Thank you, Dominique. But we're going to have Alex briefly discuss that here. But, yeah, she brings up a good point. What's the difference between this and just calling an Article 5 convention?
Well, thank you so much for that call. I wish we did have another 2 hours to go through this. But I'll start by saying I believe an Article 5, a so-called convention of states, would be catastrophic for our country, because right now our Constitution is still the supreme law of the land. Right now we're in the right. They're the ones acting lawlessly. They're the ones usurping powers illegally. And so we still have the law on our side. If they were able to get a constitutional convention and change the Constitution, I can guarantee you the forces that are pursuing this, that again right now are in control of our Congress and the executive branch of our government, would try to legalize and normalize these abuses and usurpations that have taken place. So it's an incredibly dangerous idea, in my opinion. It ought to be resisted with every fiber of our being if we do hope to preserve our republic and preserve our Constitution. Now, nullification is an entirely different issue. So a convention of states, a constitutional convention, seeks to change the Constitution as if there were some defect in the Constitution. And I always ask proponents, what's the defect that you seek to remedy? So, well, the federal government is doing this that it's not allowed to do. Yeah, that's because it's ignoring the Constitution. Mm-hmm. So Article 6 points out that federal laws made in pursuance thereof, in other words, in pursuance with the Constitution, they are constitutional, are the supreme laws of the land. Federal laws that are not constitutional, federal statutes that are self-evidently unconstitutional, like handing all this power over to the WHO, is by definition not part of the supreme law of the land because it wasn't made in pursuance thereof. And so then the states have an obligation to step in with nullification or interposition. Historically, the church has known this as the doctrine of the lesser magistrate, to interpose. So the state, the lesser magistrate, interposing between the federal government, which is behaving lawlessly and wickedly, and the people of that state. So totally different animals. I believe nullification, like our founding fathers believed, is the rightful remedy to the problem we're facing right now. If at some point somebody identifies a deficiency in the Constitution that needs to be remedied, we have a different way of modifying the Constitution that doesn't put our whole Constitution at risk. So I hope we can use that method to rectify any potential defects in the Constitution.
Veronica is next. Go ahead, Veronica. You're on the air.
Hello?
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. I'm so upset right now. I'm outraged at what I'm hearing. Because I feel like this is a spiritual matter. Mm-hmm. The Bible tells us we're not supposed to be fighting against flesh and blood. Mm-hmm. And when I listened to Jimmy DeYoung back last year or the year before, you know, he talks about the stage being set. If we know the stage is being set, why are we not doing more spiritual fighting instead of fighting the enemy? Because that's the flesh and blood. I'm upset because I know for a fact God is not going to violate his own spiritual law. He's not going to come down to earth and do for us what he has gave power to the born again believers to do. And I want to know what it is we need to do as the born again believers, so that we can get out there and make some headway in the name of Jesus instead of fighting each other.
Okay, and thank you, Veronica. We got your point. Alex.
Thank you for mentioning that. In fact, I very frequently quote Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12, stating exactly what you just said, that we're not in a battle against flesh and blood, but against powers, principalities, the rulers of the darkness, the spiritual wickedness in high places. And then the Bible tells us how we are to wage war. In fact, it tells us that we are to take up the shield of faith to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. Then we are to take the sword of the Spirit, which is, of course, the Word of God, the Bible, as our offensive weapon. And that applies here as well. The Bible, it basically has a very clear job description for government. It is to punish evil and protect the good. And unfortunately, that's been flipped upside down. But what you see all throughout the Bible, from Exodus all the way up through into the New Testament, is believers standing against wickedness in government. We had Elijah standing up to Ahab. We had Moses and Aaron standing up to Pharaoh. We had the Hebrew midwives standing up to Pharaoh. We have Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego saying that they will not bow down before this idol. So these are all responses of God's people in the physical realm. And so I think all of this needs to apply. But we live in a constitutional republic where we, the people, are supposed to be the ones in charge. And so we have an obligation to properly operate our government in a way that is prescribed by God. I mean, God told us why he created civil government. And if we, the supposed rulers of this country, don't properly exercise our political authority, we end up in a big mess like we're in right now. So I think, yes, this is a spiritual fight. There's no question about it, but it has political dimensions, and we need to take action in the political realm as well.
Thank you, Veronica. Bob is next. Go ahead, Bob.
Yes, thank you. What Alex just said answered much of what I would have brought up, and it's a kind of a carryover from Brandon's show. Like, he had that guest, Dr. Naomi Wolf, that's apparently a left-leaning person that's kind of seeing some of the same things in terms of overreach of power, and putting it mildly.
Yep. And thank you, Bob. I do understand the context of our program, what our listeners have heard here today.
Well, unfortunately, I didn't hear all of Alex's comments, but the, with the potential for the medical lockdown or whatever we're talking about there.
Tell you what, it's alarming. Alex, 20 seconds. Go ahead.
Well, we have a lot on our plates to deal with. I hope Christians and the church will get active in this fight. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. And yes, that's spiritual liberty, but with spiritual liberty also comes economic liberty and political liberty. We are up against absolute evil, and if we don't get active, if we don't get involved, it's going to be a very significant problem. Thanks again for having me, Jim. God bless you, and God bless you to the listeners.
Thank you, Alex. Bob, thank you for your call. Friends, with the information you have learned, would you take a link to this program, send it out to others, crosstalkamerica.com. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.